Hi, everyone. This is Ryan here, and welcome to another episode of The Stoic Advantage. Today, I am lucky to have Bob Simber with me. So Bob is a middle school English teacher and co-founder of Behavior Mods in St. Louis, Missouri. He has been practicing Stoicism regularly for about 5 years, and he is also a published poet and a short story writer. So Bob, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks for having me.
So the first question I'm going to ask you is a question I ask all my guests. That is, when were you first introduced to Stoic philosophy?
I was first exposed actually during my undergrad. I graduated with a degree in philosophy from my bachelor's degree. And one of the courses that we had, I actually had to read Meditations. So the course was Philosophy of Happiness. I even remember the course name. So that was my first exposure to it, and I returned to it later because it was so profound to me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, like, where did you go after the Meditations?
After the Meditations, I actually looked up, you know, who were the other philosophers, and I actually went to Seneca after that because he was one of the other philosophers that was mentioned. And then I think it was the moral letters. And then after that, I was interested in the third guy, Epictetus, and I went to him for that.
I'm curious. I mean, you obviously know a lot about Stoicism, and you probably have noticed that there's a big comeback over the past decade or so in popular culture when it comes to Stoicism. Why do you think there has been this comeback?
You know, I honestly, sometimes I think to myself, and I was actually talking to this yesterday with Nancy Sherman, who's a Georgetown philosophy professor, and I got to talk to her about it, is sometimes the spotlight that has come back, I fear that for the wrong reasons, because you probably know this as well, is that there's a lot of, you know, the fitness, there's a kind of a fitness sphere that's gotten a hold of Stoicism, and they've gotten to this sort of alpha male, macho, masculine sort of mindset. I think, but to kind of answer your question, I think that it's arisen again in popularity just because people can see the applicability to everyday circumstances. And I think that people are really looking for simplified ways to do it without fully committing themselves to, say, a religious ritual or some other dogmatic set of beliefs that requires so much time and effort apart from the actual practice itself. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's kind of one of the things that's created a boom with Stoicism. And I think that people are getting closer to being ready to hear it, because that's one of the things that, you know, in education, sometimes parents and sometimes students are like, their eyes sort of, you know, get blurred and they roll in the back of their head when they hear the word philosophy. And I think that society is getting closer to being able to digest these ideas.
I want to go into what you actually do. I mentioned that you are the co-founder of Behavior Mods. So can you talk a bit about what Behavior Mods is, a program you co-founded in St. Louis, and what is your goal with the program?
Man, well, Ryan, really what we're trying to do, my partner, Dobby Harrion and I, we created this program a few months ago before the virus hit. And that's another story about, you know, kind of trying to pivot with our goals and making them sort of doable. But our plan for Behavior Mods is kind of to take the bare bones cognitive tools that Stoicism has and make them applicable to school age children, K through 12. And obviously, you being a high school teacher, you know that the maturity that comes with a student in high school is much different than how you would approach someone in, you know, first or second grade. And so what we've tried to do is we've based a set of lesson plans based on the four virtues: temperance, courage, justice, and wisdom. And really what we've done is create those four categories and created lessons to go along with showing students why those four virtues are worth pursuing and how they can be easily practiced in the classroom. And really what our main sort of pitch for that is that we tell administrators that we think that these plans can help positively influence school culture and the socio-emotional types of things that can positively influence schools. And really what we're trying to do is we want to go to the front lines with schools that sort of have been overlooked. We really want to go into the St. Louis public school system, and we really want to go into the East St. Louis school system, where there's a lot of retention issues, where there's a lot of violence, where there's a lot of dropout rates, where crime is very huge. We're really trying to get into those avenues.
So you're trying to equip these students with kind of these stoic tools to kind of help them remain resilient within school?
Yeah, exactly. To remain resilient, and also how to conflict resolution also. If you talk to any teacher in the urban setting, even in the suburban setting, and even in the rural setting, there are some particular students that could really benefit from one-on-one instruction or small group instruction that has to do with rehabilitation, because some kids don't know that there's a better way to go about thinking about your actions and really taking time to think about letting those proto emotions set in, these emotions of fury, of anger, of seeking revenge. Don't know about, oh, I am going to judge this impression. Let's sit around with this impression and then act on it later. And so that's kind of one of the things that we really want to do using our lessons that we've created.
So I'm curious, that's great how you're developing these lesson plans. How do you go about teaching the principles of stoicism to young people, especially those who are in those primary grades? I mean, you're probably not lecturing to them about Seneca. How do you go about delivering your message?
Yeah, man. So really, that's a great question. And that's something that we've talked about, because we both love stoicism, but really we want to change the culture of the school and society at large. And so in the primary grades and the younger grades, we really don't talk about stoicism that much, as much as just doing the lessons. Because the lessons themselves, there's a lot of commonalities with a lot of other philosophies too. And they're so applicable without even going into, oh, Seneca lived like this, so that's why it's important, right? We can just kind of go into the lesson itself and have fun doing it. There's a lesson that I like to do on temperance, on acting in moderation, where we bring in candy, we put it in a bowl, and we set up a curtain so that the rest of the class can't see, and you're totally anonymous when you do this activity. And what we do is we fill the bowl with candy and tell students one at a time to come pick up how much they would like from the bowl with no limits. And so you have these students that come up and say, oh, no one's going to know it was me. I'm going to take half the bowl. No one will know, and it benefits myself. And then once the last student comes up, they're kind of screwed because there's not much left over. And then we can then talk about, oh, what if you were modest about how much you took? What if you were temperate about, and obviously we would have to change the vocabulary, but what if you could control your actions so much where everyone could benefit potentially by only taking one or two pieces of candy as opposed to three-fourths of the bowl or whatever, right? So that's kind of how we try to use those lessons.
You were on the Practical Stoic podcast, and in your interview you talked about how there's so many people writing about teaching pedagogy, but barely anyone's talking about teacher mindfulness and how to develop a strong and resilient mind within the classroom. So I'm wondering, how could stoicism help teachers in and outside of the classroom?
Dude, it is a huge, and you, did you say you were in the public system?
Yes.
Yeah. And you probably know this too, because a lot of professional development, you come in, right? And you can correct me if you're wrong, but it probably goes something like this. You come in and you talk about how you can have diversity in the classroom, why it's important, how to sort of build lessons that sort of hit on different cultural points, right? I mean, that's probably where a lot of the professional development comes in, and that's very important. But as you said, there's this huge lack of just practices, man. It's like I know that Epictetus is really big with what is the difference between practice and theory. And there's a lot of good theory that comes out of these professional development courses, but there's no practice, man. Like, I don't know. And that came up, that was a big frustration that I've been having with a lot of professional development. And we really think that the Stoic mindset, and this is the beauty of working with educators, is that we can really go deep into the psyche and the psychology of these different thought processes and the different cognitive switches that you can do. And so even though behavior mods right now, we're focusing on students and also parents, because COVID-19 came and we just thought that parents would benefit from it. We think that teachers and admins can as well, by just using these texts and using them to not only increase our awareness of cultural bias and stereotypes and things like that, but also look within and sort of edit out and filter our different ways of thinking so that we can be better educators. We can be better at our pedagogies. I really think that there's a big benefit to that.
I'm curious about yourself. So what Stoic practices do you find yourself using the most?
Well, just in general, as you said, the dichotomy of control is pretty useful, and it helps to filter a lot of negative emotions that could arise and we would pay attention to for nothing, right? Because if it's out of our control, it's neither good nor bad, and there's really no point in dwelling on those. One of the big things that I, especially like during my first year teaching, which was a couple years ago, one of the big things that I really, really took great practice to put in effect is the view from above. Because when you're in the classroom, it's like you're in your own space, your own boundary and your own little world, right? And I feel like that is a huge hurdle as an educator, let alone a new one, because we think that, oh, so-and-so, has behavioral issues. Oh, woe is me, right? This whole, oh, my life is so horrible. But really, when you look at it, it really is a very minuscule issue. When looking at the immensity of the universe, when looking at how much more important stuff is out in the world, it really is not a big deal. And I actually had it was one of those like posters, those inspirational posters. I actually had this on my wall by my desk in the classroom, of those like of the galaxy and all the stars. And then it has like a little arrow that says, you are here, that shows like you're a little speck in this huge thing. That really helped me out a lot to let me know that just calm down. It's not that serious. It's not that intense. I'll get through it. One of the other Stoic practices that I have is kind of reflecting on the ephemeral nature of what issue comes about. I always think to myself, it's all temporary. If I'm having a specifically a bad day, or if, my lesson didn't go over as I'd wanted, or, if I wasn't as goofy in this presentation as if I, all these stupid things that come with, being self-conscious as a teacher, I would just tell myself, it's short-lived and tomorrow's a new day and it'll start over. And I'll have another opportunity to put Marcus's daily mantra, as you beautifully mentioned, waking up and just expecting the stuff too. Premeditatio malorum, the negative visualization, that type of thing helps a lot as well.
So when you go into these schools with your program, are you met with anyone who holds certain myths about Stoicism? So can you get into what typical Stoic myths are out there and kind of get into how we can dispel them?
And when you sent me that, that's a beautiful question. And it's one that is really important. Luckily, Ryan, a lot of educators and administrators that we talk to haven't heard of Stoicism. So they don't know that they don't know that there's myths in it and stuff like that. One of the big things that I am foreseeing in people objecting to Stoicism is the whole notion of slavery. It's one that it's hard to overcome, and I have to be open and say, I can't run away and say, I feel like saying it's a historical thing and that they have a certain time and culture, I feel like that's just a cop out. Mm-hmm. I'm not really comfortable with that answer. I would straight up say that even though they were maybe seen as more contemporary and they're saying, oh, you should treat slaves appropriately, I would still say, I would be honest and say that's not far enough. They should have said, no, slavery is terrible. And I'd be straight up with that. That's one of the myths that I can kind of see that might not go over well. And also one of the things is in regards to equal rights for women, I feel like that might be a big thing. And as you were saying, Ryan, about the big thing that's come up with a lot of popularity with Ryan Holiday and a lot of like Instagrammers and their accounts that have this sort of machismo, alpha male, you know, stoic outlook. I feel like that could kind of get in the way with, is it toxic? Is there toxic masculinity in stoicism? And I would have to point them out and say, I'd probably go to Musonius Rufus because he has a really good lectures about how women are, you know, they have the ability to reason and that's why they should also study philosophy as well. And that's one of the big myths that I'm uncomfortable about, to be honest with you. We're still trying to get over those two different things of slavery and feminism. And I think one of the big things also is, you know, this is such a westernized view, you know, it's a very Greek and Roman view. It's a very Western centered view. And I'm kind of worried about behavior mods if people not accepting that the ideas other than, you know, putting labels on them as this Western imperial Roman Greek thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So those are two big myths, or I'm sorry, those are actually three.
So I want to shift away from Stoicism just for a moment and turn attention to yourself. So you're an avid reader. You're also a published writer. Can you get into what books have made the biggest impact on your life?
You know, Ryan, a lot. I mean, for writing, a lot. There's been a lot of fiction that's really influenced me. I actually recently read, there's a beautiful novel. It's called The Overstory by Richard Powers. And I just got done reading that. And it is, there are some passages and some pages that I was just breathless. They just left me breathless. And that rarely, you know, happens so often like that. Also, Cannery Row by Steinbeck. I love Steinbeck novels, and a lot of poetry and fiction has been influenced. And also the Swedish poet Thomas Tranströmer, the poet. He actually won a Nobel Prize for literature a few years ago, and I actually just studied some of his work and translated from Swedish into English. is beautiful. It's very surreal. It's in the surrealism sort of background style. And as far as nonfiction, one of the books that really comes to mind is it's a book called Voices from Chernobyl by Svetlana Alexievich. And that book is just full of interviews. She went to the aftermath of the Chernobyl nuclear fallout, and she interviewed all these people. And it is so dense, man. It is. I don't think I've read any other yellow journalism collection that has so much power as that. It all a broad spectrum of emotions, animal rights comes in, you know, people making observations about, oh, what dog are we going to kill today to eat? And it's just crazy, man. And it's really shocking. And as far as philosophy, I would say one of my earlier sort of transitional periods was a lot of Zen Buddhism writing. So, Suzuki is a big one. Alan Watts. I read a lot of Alan Watts, and even listening to him on like his voice, just presentations is really something cool. So I definitely recommend that for listeners. For sure. And then I was really influenced by existentialism, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say that because a lot of it made me feel really dark and dull inside and almost morose. It was almost depressing reading. Mm-hmm. But as far as like, you know, the how to create meaning in your life, I really took a lot from Camus and Sartre and even Kierkegaard, some of Kierkegaard's writings. I really was influenced by that. Spinoza as well. It really got me interested in ethics. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of the Stoic texts, man. I would say probably Meditations. I just think it's so intimate that you get to read a diary of a Roman emperor who practiced Stoicism. That is amazing to me.
That's awesome. And I mentioned you are a writer. Could you get into what your writing process looks like and whether Stoicism helps to inform your writing process?
My writing process, and this is really controversial because a lot of different writers, one of my most influential teachers that I had when studying literature, if Dr. Murray Farish was, not doctor, but Murray Farish, if he's listening to this right now, he'd be rolling around really angry. I'm one of those people that I need to be inspired to write. And that's really controversial. A lot of writers will say, no, there's a story within you that wants to come out. You just need to sit down and write and do it and don't wait to be inspired because who knows when that'll come, right? I need that. I really need that. And one of the things that works for me in just getting general ideas is just going outside in nature and looking at the foam, the flecks of foam in the boar's mouth, as Marcus says, and seeing the bending of wheat that's waiting to be sown and stuff like that. I really get a lot of freedom when just going on walks in the woods or just like outside in the park. I live really close to that. Yeah. And as far as Stoicism, it's very strange because in my artistic endeavors, there's not a lot of Stoicism that goes into the process. It seems to be a different animal altogether. Mm-hmm. It's almost like Stoicism is my rational part, and then the art and the literature is like my subconscious, you know, coming out. And it's very hard to explain. I would say explaining my Stoic practice is much easier than explaining how I write, for sure.
So another question for you, a question I like to ask all my guests. What advice would you give your younger self, maybe in your circumstance, your pre-teaching self?
My younger pre-teaching self, man. Just calm down. I'm one of those people, when I get into something, I really throw my all into it. Mm-hmm. And I don't have enough fingers on my hands to count how many ideas that I've had and how many dreams and, you know, how many different careers I've wanted to go into and how many, you know, setbacks that I thought, oh, this is fatal. I'm never going to overcome this, you know, and so many sleepless nights about worrying. And I would just tell myself, you know, just calm down. And for example, during my grad school degree in teaching, my advisor came up to me and said, oh, by the way, you need to take these three courses and they're not offered until the following semester after the one coming up. And that just devastated me, man. And that was before a lot of my heightened Stoic practice. And I don't know, I really would tell myself just to calm down, and not everything that happens is fatal. Like you said, the obstacle is the way, as Ryan Holiday puts it. I really wish that I had that wisdom instead of just freaking out and stressing myself out about it.
That's great advice. So before I get into my last question, I just want to ask you about our current historical moment and whether Stoicism could help us when dealing with this pandemic and also with the racial tension that's going on in the United States and really worldwide.
Ryan, to be honest, this is the mission of what we're trying to do right now. Is I think that in order to go forward, I think we need to, at least right now, with early data, with trying to collect stuff, I think that the only way to go forward with our model is to believe that we can make a change in the community overall. And really, if we look at the cognitive, if we look at Albert Ellis, if we look at Aaron Beck, the pioneers of cognitive behavioral therapy and rational emotive behavioral therapy, these have proven records of people coming to different forms of thinking. I really think that both of those therapists, the influence of Stoicism on their methods, I think that that's really where the bread and butter comes into play as far as success. I think that not only can it change community of school climate, I really think that it can potentially lower crime, if it, even by a few, hundreds of a percent, I would say that that's a success. We were really trying to go full force into it, really trying to make not only change in education, but in globally through different communities of color, people that are fighting radicalism with terrorism. We think that all of these different ideologies could be softened with Stoic practice. Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, I guess that's, I really think that it can make a really positive change with being able to observe those who are considered the other in society. Mm-hmm. Because as you know, a lot of the Stoics came from a view of cosmopolitanism, of being a global citizen. And so really, I think that once we can instill those values after the sort of how to deal with your own emotions, I think that we really can make a change in having people see that we're all one community, and what is good for the individual is good for the society overall. So, yeah.
Awesome. So my last question for you is, what is next for Bob Simber?
What's next? I'm on summer right now, and you probably are as well. So there's a lot of increased time for building up behavior mods, and we're trying to get the pilot program going, because as I've mentioned a couple times, a lot of schools, they've changed priorities. They're now, with being in St. Louis and being so close to Ferguson and also the coronavirus, people are wondering how their students are going to eat and get internet. Mm-hmm. And not really concerned with these sort of emotional supports quite yet, because, if we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you need the sort of basics first before you can go into the emotional health. You need food and water before you can get to even thinking about how you're going to change your mindset, right? And so hopefully once this starts to calm down over the summer, we really want to get that pilot program going, and hopefully we can start to make positive change. And I'm really looking forward to I might be playing the workaholic life of going teaching at, getting out at 3:30 p.m. and then going right to an after school activity with behavior mods and teaching Stoicism. And hopefully that'll come up, because that's a great problem to have of too much work. So that's awesome. That's really cool.
Well, awesome, Bob. And I think you're doing something really innovative when it comes to Stoicism. Could you just tell us where we can learn more about your program, Behavior Mods, as well as where we could find your writing?
Yeah, for Behavior Mods, we're actually just developing the website, and we're building it up. So the website is not there, but if you go to facebook.com/behaviormods, all one word, you can definitely like us, check us out. We're also going to be developing our Instagram page, Behavior Mods, all one word, so you can follow us there. We also have LinkedIn. You can search us up, Behavior Mods, there. And if any of you are interested in looking at our parent seminars that we've been doing over the summer with how to deal with working from home if you have children, you can YouTube, if you search Behavior Mods, that's our tag on there. And go ahead and subscribe and look at our videos, all free of charge. If put it into practice, we have a presentation there. We actually have one today after this interview, so that's why I was telling you about earlier. As far as writing, if you just Google the letter R and then M, so RM, it stands for Robert Murray, my initials, and then my last name, Simber, there's a lot of fiction and poetry that'll come up from that. And you can just surf and a lot of stuff will come up.
Well, thanks again for coming on, Bob, and good luck with all that you're doing. And I hope to have you on again.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.